Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with New York City jazz drummer and composer Joe McCarthy on the 2022 New York Afro Bop Alliance Big Band CD, the Pan American Nutcracker Suite. This album is what the 60s Mad Men would have branded a travelogue in sound. Expressed in grand arrangements, brilliant solos, and wonderful drumming, this album is a tour de force, an all-encompassing, immersive sound experience. Joe gets into this, live shows, modern life, and much more. Enjoy this interview.
Thank you for taking a minute out today. I really enjoyed the new album, and I look forward to talking to you about it.
Cool.
So, first and foremost, I want to know, how did you do over this pandemic? How did you do over this time of, you know, quarantine and everything that was going on, and how did it change you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was rough. I basically, you know, supported myself teaching virtually, you know, as a lot of musicians did, but I also had a lot of time to, you know, think about some new stuff, including the Nutcracker, you know. So I think some people did less. I think I probably did more, you know, because I'm the type of person that can't really sit still, you know. So I kind of pushed sort of hard through the whole thing because the lack of no live performance and all that stuff was kind of rough. So I just sort of buckled down and got after some stuff. I practiced a lot and, you know, obviously I was teaching to pay the bills, but we, a lot of the ideas for the Nutcracker started to really formulate during that time.
So what was it specifically about, you know, maybe the time period where this came about? Was the Nutcracker something that you wanted to do for a while?
Yeah. It started a few years ago, and then it was sort of put on the back shelf simply because I was too busy. And then all of a sudden I wasn't busy at all. And so then I had more time to really focus on it, you know. And so that's, yeah, the Nutcracker's been going sort of back and forth for quite a while. And through sort of a little bit of a push from, especially from my wife, she's like, you need to get this thing done. So we actually ended up getting a commission from a college in Dallas, the University of Texas Arlington. They commissioned us to finish it so that we could do it with the students, with their big band. And that was last year. And so November, I believe. And so that was really kind of put everything into motion to get moving, you know. And we got it done. And then after we performed it with the students, you know, we went back to, I co-wrote the music with a dear friend of mine, Vince Norman, who I've done a lot of stuff with. And after we did the commission, we went back and rewrote a couple of things that I wasn't happy with. And then we went in and recorded it.
You know, I've noticed with a lot of musicians, as bad as this time period was, especially for, you know, musicians, you know, there were things that people had the chance to do that maybe they wouldn't have been able to do before. Was that kind of the case with this, that you finally had the time to do kind of this project you've been thinking about for years?
Well, I don't know if it was something that I, you know, I mean, I play music full time and music is always in front of everything else. But I think, as you know, and I'm sure speaking to a lot of other musicians, sometimes schedule, in terms of traveling or in terms of just other things that just, you know, absolutely have to get done simply because during that period prior to the pandemic, you know, we were actually playing a lot, you know, so there were physical commitments where you had to be here or had to be there. So there, you know, there wasn't as much time to actually just sit and really think, you know, because I'd be usually running around all the time. And so I just really started thinking about it a lot more. And then when the commission came, you know, we had to move because it actually came up kind of fast. So we had to sort of jump into gear to get it done. And we actually got the bulk of it done in a very short time. So that was interesting.
Yeah, sure. So I'm curious, what are you hoping the listener, those that either download or buy this, what do you hope they get from this musical experience?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I'm not exactly sure. I've never been a fan of sort of regurgitating other people's music But I'm also classically trained. So for years and years, I've played the, you know, Tchaikovsky's music, you know, as a classical percussionist. And, you know, there's really only two types of music. There's good music and bad music. And Tchaikovsky's music is very good. And all of his notes are perfect. So I what I really wanted to do was, this piece of music has been viewed, you know, I mean, there are a couple other versions of it, and of course there is the Ellington, but I just, the more that I started thinking about it, I'm like, I really want to do something just wildly different with this piece of music. And so as I was studying, you know, the original score, this whole concept was based around grooves, different grooves. And so because of, you know, the music that we play in Afrobop, you know, we the band covers a lot of territory, and I just sort of went around the world, so to speak, with each of the movements, and all of the music was built from these different groups. And so I think the experience would be, you know, as I had mentioned, good music, great music is great music, good music is good music. But I want people to be able to experience something that most people know very well in a completely different setting. So I think that's probably the shortest answer I can give.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, being plugged into, you know, the mecca of jazz in the world and being a very busy musician, I'm curious, how do you see the world of jazz, you know, coming out of this stronger? Or how do you see the world of the jazz community changing and doing things in a different way because of what we went through over COVID?
The musicians that I respect the most, and there's a lot of them, are musicians that have a very broad spectrum, you know, and they don't, you know, it's not just going to be this or it's not just going to be that. And I think that for a lot of the musicians, even though the pandemic was a total drag in so many ways, I think for a lot of the musicians, it was, I mean, I'm not going to say it was business as usual, but I mean, everybody was still going after what it is that they're going after, you know? So I think in terms of performance, obviously, you know, as soon as the fog lifted, so to speak, and then it was time for everybody to start playing gigs again, you know, then everybody was going crazy trying to get gigs because, you know, everybody wanted to play again. A lot of people wanted to continue eating and paying their bills. So I'm not exactly sure how, you know, this has affected everyone, but I will say that a lot of the music, you know, post-pandemic seems to be a result of everyone's thinking a lot. Does that make sense? You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, introspective type stuff, you know, that seemed to have happened. And, you know, the way that, you know, people had approached, you know, what it was that they were composing because, you know, this was so on the forefront of what everybody was dealing with. But I think that, you know, in terms of like stylistically, and maybe this may not have anything to do with the pandemic, I'm really enjoying the way that, you know, if we're using the word jazz, that it continues to open up, you know, and embrace more of these, you know, different sort of combinations of, I guess, styles or however it is that you like to define, you know, different ways of the world in terms of music, you know. But I think there's some really great shit out there right now, and people are come, you know, have made some beautiful music, you know, and it certainly has and continues to inspire me, you know.
Well put. So I'm curious, from your perspective as a musician and even thinking about the audience, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music as we start getting back to it more and more?
You know, everybody's always plugged in all the time. You know, I was watching the U.S. Open last night, and, you know, of course, Serena, that could have been her last night, right? And everybody's on their effing phone instead of watching the match. It's like, put your phone down, and this might be the last time you see this. So, and every time people go to events, they have to record everything that they see. Why don't you put your phone down and use your ears and your brain to pay attention to what's happening in front of you in a live setting? So I think that live music is more important than it has ever been. And everybody needs to sort of remind themselves to just put their frickin' phone down and listen to the music. Watch the musicians. Feel what it is that they're giving you. Because, I mean, for, you know, however long that people actually listen to people play music, music is the most powerful force on this planet, you know? So let's get back to paying attention to what's happening on the stage. We don't need to send it to somebody and all this stuff. And I'm sure I'll get castrated for my comments, but I just, that stuff really pisses me off. And I want people to go to a venue and listen and observe, you know, enjoy the music, you know, have an actual physical experience instead of everything always being plugged in through their headphones. Does that make sense?
That's totally fair. I agree. Yeah, I inadvertently, long story short, I inadvertently got my Facebook account got hacked and it went away, and I just feel great. I feel relieved that, you know, I don't know what's going on. People are contacting me in old-fashioned ways. I run into musicians. I have no idea they were on tour, and they tell me firsthand. I'm like, this is great. You know, like, you know, everybody in my house about 3 months ago ran outside because there was some kind of lunar event going on. I had no idea. But before that, I would get told 1,000 times on social media. So there's something, the universe gave me a gift without me even knowing it.
Man, I amen to that. And it's like, you know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to my manager this morning, you know, because we got this record coming out and, you know, we've got this push for all of this social media stuff. And again, I mean, I shouldn't be saying it, but I really don't enjoy social media. I love when people can find out about what it is that we're doing. But me personally, I am awful at it. Absolutely awful. It's a very hard thing for me to do. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense to me. And some people are so good at it, and their careers, whether or not they're even, some of these people are the greatest musicians in the world or not, they are so good at social media that they are doing so much stuff, and so much of that stuff is so hard for me. It really is. You know, I'm just not good at that stuff. I would rather do what we're doing right now. I'd rather talk to somebody on the phone, or if somebody wants to know about the record, you know, to do an interview or something, or just have a chat about it instead of it always being, you know, like a third party experience where everyone is going to express their opinion and they may never have even spoken to that musician or that band or whoever it is. And, you know, I kind of liked it the other way, you know,
I 100% agree. And I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I think as connected technically as we are because of technology, we are more detached as humanity than anything else. I remember Moby had a video that came out a few years ago, and it was almost mind-numbing and sad, but it was funny in a way. And it was all these cartoon cats, and they were all on their phone, falling in holes, running into each other. And the whole video is these, like, cartoon cats on their phone looking at their screens, and it was his it was his commentary. It was almost like a Monty Python skit.
Yep.
Oh my God. So he's got all this like electronica loud music going in the background, and just every single cat, and there was, it sometimes there would be 10 to 20, every single cat was on its phone, and not one time in that video did anybody look up from their screen. And it just showed how, what are we doing, man? Like,
yeah,
I know we want to connect, but if we don't do these things, and that's the thing, it's one of the reasons why I've increasingly enjoyed doing interviews and podcasting more. There's a therapeutic element that goes into the fact that you get the chance to talk to a captive audience about what you love to create. And there's something therapeutic about the fact that I love this music so much, I get to take what you love and give it to a bunch of people to hopefully give them the serum to love jazz. That right there That's the way we should be connecting with each other. And like you said, music is the most powerful language on this planet. It's the one language we can all understand.
That is exactly right. And it's too bad that more people don't understand that, you know? And, but again, you know, I'm not saying that they don't understand that, but it's like, it just gets overlooked, you know? And, I think that, I don't know, as I get a little bit older, the simpler things in lives, in my life, are so much more important to me than all the other stuff that I thought that I was going to try and get done when I was younger, which didn't do a damn thing for me, whether I did get it done or not. And it's like now, it's just like, I just want to be with people that are engaged and, you know, and just enjoy life. And in terms of the music, you know, I wasn't trying to move a mountain with that piece of music, but, you know, we worked really hard on that piece of music, and I feel very confident about what it is. And, you know, I think everyone is going to take it away a little bit differently, and that's great. That's exactly what I hope, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, just put on some music and let it do something good for you, you know. And that's, I mean, that's why I play. That's why I practice. I just want to continue to be able to speak, you know, my version of the music, you know, to everyone. And also in terms of teaching, too. You know, it's like, you know, great teachers are people that have had, you know, a lot of experience and take it seriously and are not distracted by a bunch of other, you know, bullshit that has nothing to do with what it is that we're really doing, you know.
And speaking of getting that music out there, tell me the best place for folks to either buy, stream it, and what you're doing with live gigs, anything in your world coming up.
Oh, great. Well, we've got a bunch of stuff coming up. We're putting a bunch of dates together, most immediately for people that live in the Northeast and around Connecticut, Boston, and New York. On the 8th of September, we're actually having a pre-release listening party where we're actually just going to get together and we're going to do exactly what you and I are doing. We're going to talk and we're going to play the music and going to answer questions and just talk about how we assembled the record. From that point forward, we have a bunch of dates which will be they'll be out soon for everyone to see, but we are, we will be doing the record release, the official record release at Dizzy's, in New York City on, December the 14th. But there's going to be a bunch of dates that will be leading up to that. And, all those will be coming out very soon. But if, the music, the official release is the 9th of September, we are streaming, one of the movements entitled Trade Pack, which is, you can purchase that now as a single. And there's also, you have the option to do the pre-save for the record, which is on all of the major platforms. And, people can go to my website, which is, joemccarthymusic.com, and everything is on there. So you can find everything you need. We have a store with a bunch of super cool merchandise and stuff, and the band also has a bunch of other records, and you know, everything's on there. So,
right on, Joe. Thank you for taking time out today. This was great. I love that we arced into the reality. I'm going to be 50 here in October, so I'm getting to that point where it's like, man, you know, we're getting close to the end of this, so we got to grab what's real, you know.
You're right. I'm going to be 57, so I'm a few years ahead of you.
Yeah. Beautiful, Joe. It's always great to catch up, man. Good luck with everything. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Joe for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.